Vasudevayam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Canto 8, Chapter 24, and I'll be starting from verse number 11, and there are several verses here until the purport comes. I'll be reading just the translations of these verses, mainly to conserve the time, because there's only very little time to give this class in. Text number 11. In this, the present millennium, King Satyavrata later became the son of Vivasvan, the king of the sun planet, and was known as Shraddadeva. By the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he was given the post of Manu. Text number 12. Translation. One day, while King Satyavrata was performing austerities by offering water on the bank of the river Kritamala, a small fish appeared in the water in his palm. Text 13, translation. Satyavrata, the king of Dravidadesh, threw the fish into the water of the river, along with the water in his palm, O King Pariksit, descendant of Bharat. Text number 14. With an appealing voice, the poor small fish said to King Satyavrata, who was very merciful, "My dear king, protector of the poor, why are you throwing me into the water of the river, where there are other aquatics who can kill me? I'm very much afraid of them." This is kind of humorous. This is the Supreme Lord speaking. Supreme Lord expressing fear, being afraid. He's playing his part very well. Purport. This is just a very short purport. In the Matsya Purana, it is said, Ananta Shaktir Bhagavan, Matsya Rupi Janardana, Kridartam Yachchayam Asa, Svayam Satyavratam Nripam, which means the Supreme Personality of Godhead possesses unlimited potency. Nonetheless, in his pastime in the form of a fish, he begged protection from King Satyavrata. So this is the verse we're going to be doing together. We'll be doing text 15. Okay. Is that all right? Just 1 second. That's the one I studied. Yeah.
Tam atmano nugrahar tam atmano nugrahartam pritya matsya vapurdaram ajanan rakshanartaya shaparya samano dadhe tam atmano nugrahartam pritya matsya vapurdaram Ajanan Rakshanartaya Shaparya Samano Dhei Tamatmano Nugrahartam Pritya Matsya Vapurdharam Ajanan Rakshanartaya Shaparya Samano Dhei.
Sorry, please chant. Ladies, please. Tam unto the fish, Atmanaha, personal, Anugraha artam, to show favor, Pritya, very much, excuse me, very much pleased, Matsyavapu daram, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who had assumed the form of a fish, Ajanan, without knowledge of this, Rakshana Artaya, does just to give protection, Saparya, of the fish, Saha, the king, Manaha, mind, Dadhei, decided. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Ki. To please himself, King Satyavrata, not knowing that the fish was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, decided with great pleasure to give the fish protection. Please repeat. To please himself, King Satyavrata, not knowing that the fish was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, decided with great pleasure to give the fish protection. Purport. Here is an example of giving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead even without knowledge. Such service is called Agyata Sukriti. King Satyavrata wanted to show his own mercy, not knowing that the fish was Lord Vishnu. By such unknowing devotional service, one is favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Service rendered to the Supreme Lord, knowingly or unknowingly, never goes in vain. To please himself, King Satyavrata, not knowing that the fish was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, decided with great pleasure to give the fish protection. First, let me thank you all very much for attending this morning. It's a pleasure and a privilege to share with you these wonderful teachings of Srila Prabhupada. And I pray for your prayers that I may say something useful and beneficial for everyone here and whoever is listening on the internet, so that we may take from the class something that we hopefully did not have before we entered the class. I pray that the Supreme Lord may bless the talk for the benefit of all of us, including myself, of course. So here we have an example, as Srila Prabhupada is mentioning in the purport, of Agyata Sukriti. In other examples that Srila Prabhupada has given, for example, a tree gives flowers and it gives fruit, leaves. So when the fruit drops to the ground, if we take the fruit, and we as devotees, which we are committed to lovingly serving the Lord for our entire life, for every moment. So when we take that fruit and we eat that fruit and that fruit benefits us, the tree takes a partial benefit because the tree has supplied it. So we call that Agyati Sukriti. The tree actually, or the soul within the tree, makes some spiritual benefit as a result of that apple that we ate. Helps to preserve us, helps to nourish us and strengthen us. So it's enabling us or helping us in our devotional service. So anyone or anything who helps us in our devotional service will get some benefit. Even if, for example, you're downtown and somebody opens a door for you, even he gets benefit. Anyone who does some service to a devotee gets some benefit. Because that's the nature of Krishna, and that he loves to see his devotees benefited. He loves to see his devotees served. Why? Because they're always serving him. And he feels an eternal an eternal obligation to his devotees. As small as the service may seem to Krishna, it's always big. He never thinks this is small services, big service, and so forth. If the service is done with love, if it's done with warmth, if it's done with courtesy, with affection, with care, then Krishna is pleased. When Krishna is pleased, then that person who is performing the service will become pleased. So that tree that gave the apple may become a human being in its next birth. It's earning. Of course, when an ordinary person who is not a devotee takes it, well, there's no Agyati Sukriti there, because actually the person is simply eating it for his own sense gratification, just so they can go on becoming beautiful, wealthy, strong, powerful, famous, materially knowledgeable, cool or detached, so they say. So what benefit is there? Nothing. That's why a devotee, actually, his life is such that he benefits wherever he goes. And this book, for example, is pure devotion. It's pure Krishna. So whoever touches the book is benefited. Whoever looks at the book is benefited. Sometimes new devotees or something, non-devotees, they could hardly conceive of that. How can it's just print. It's not just print. It's ideas. It's thoughts. It's feelings. And they are emanating. And those emanations of these divine, transcendental, loving feelings of Srila Prabhupada expressing Lord Krishna's words have great potency. That's why we call it Book Bhagavat. Book Lord. So it has the power to influence, to persuade, and to transform. And that's why it is so wonderful. So Agrati Sukriti is a... we as devotees should always be thinking how we can benefit others, you know, besides just ourselves. In fact, that is the nature of a devotee. Is as he grows, he thinks more and more, or less and less, of himself, and more of others. How he can benefit them, how he can help, how he can assist, how he can aid them in their spiritual forward march towards the Lord. He tries to figure some way, especially in book distribution, we all know that sometimes a person is not at all interested, you know, at the beginning. Sorry. And so we sometimes have to think of ways in which we can get them interested, to want the book, to motivate them for it. So sometimes we'll say, well, what are you into? What is your, are you into sports? You know, are you into, what are you, your lawyer? Are you an actor or something? You engage them in some conversation which will be to their interest, and it's about them. So everybody likes to talk about himself or herself. And after they've been talking about themselves and you've been admiring some of the things they've been doing, they now have some internal obligation. Since you've listened to them, they want know something about you. And that's where it comes. The next thing is that you start talking about the benefits of the book and how the benefits of this book can impact upon all the things that they have just told you. So you connect, or you draw a relationship between what they have said, the benefits in this book, and of course those benefits that are mentioned are cited as being able to increase, improve, benefit that individual. So this is the greatest charity. Srila Prabhupada has said many, many times that the greatest welfare work is to give out these books. And as I get older and older and grow a little bit more in spirituality, not very much, but a little bit, I've come to see that. I come to really understand that. That there's so much nectar, there's so much available. Of course, as we grow and as we become purified, we are able to see that more. It's kind of like a lake. When you look at the lake, if it's stirred up, the mud from the bottom comes to the surface. And you can't see anything down there. But when the mud settles down to the bottom, you can see the bottom. So similarly, Srila Prabhupada is giving us, to his mercy, these wonderful verses and wonderful explanations of them. And enabling us to understand them, to apply them, to implement them, and to share them. So, as mentioned, when he says that this is the greatest welfare work, people give food for the give food for the hungry, they give clothing, they give shelter, they give tickets to the baseball games, all that kind of stuff. So, but what is the benefit? How does it stop the ongoing, never-ending misery that all living entities are subject and heir to? It doesn't. You fill him up with a meal, and then he's hungry again. But if you give him this book, if you give him the holy name, if you give him spiritual direction or spiritual guidance, and he begins to chant, he begins to read this, and he begins to get a life, as we say. Well, we begin to really benefit him. Because If he takes shelter of the Supreme Lord, if he depends upon Krishna, as Krishna says in all activities, just depend upon me and work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. If you become conscious of me, you will pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life by my grace. If, however, you do not work in such consciousness, but you act through false ego, not hearing me, you will be lost. So when we take shelter of Krishna, then we get his protection, we get his guidance, we get his direction. So when we give somebody this, what happens is when they begin to chant, they begin to read these, they begin to apply these things, begin to share these books, they're making spiritual advancement. They're getting merits. Those merits become the basis, for example, of lessening some disease that they may have coming for them. Because it says so often that when we chant the Hare Krishna mantra, the sinful reactions are destroyed. Of course, Krishna may leave some of them there for our further purification. Purification in the sense that if we don't suffer a little bit, if we don't feel some difficulty, some trial, some tribulation, some problem, some pressures, well then, how will we know what the suffering of other human beings is like? If you see somebody suffering, but you don't know what it feels like, you don't know what it tastes like, you don't know what the experience of it is, well, they just pass by. And that's it. But when he puts us through some little suffering, some trouble, some trial, some these tribulations, he sensitizes us to the sufferings of others. It's not just suffering as a word, but it's suffering as an experience, as a realization, which then we are prompted to try to relieve that of others who have those particular sufferings. This is what spiritual life is. This is what Srila Prabhupada is all about. This is what his coming to the United States was all about. In fact, he asks in that prayer in Boston Harbor, how will I be able to change these people who are in the mode of passion and ignorance? This is impossible for me to do. But you are the master of all mystics. Therefore, you can make transformations that are seemingly impossible. And that's actually what Srila Prabhupada did. He did the impossible. He took people who were on the street living there, like as they said, hippies. People who were spaced out. People who came from good homes, but they completely rejected those homes because they were all materialistic. So Prabhupada was able to take them and refine them and shine them and enable them to understand what the true purpose of life is and reduce their miseries, reduce the troubles, the problems that they would normally have. So many people have these mental problems today. Anxiety, uncertainty, doubt, confusion, depression, dejection, all these mental problems people have, and fear. People who are multimillionaires, they're afraid. Afraid of what? That somebody will eclipse them, somebody will outshine them. They're only living to gain this false ego gratification that I'm big, I'm great, I'm high, I'm tremendous. But came into this world left the spiritual world, came into this world only to taste what it's like, to experience what it's like, to feel what it's like to be a lord. A lord is who's wealthy, who's powerful, who's beautiful. Somebody admires you, somebody applauds you, somebody talks about you. Somebody prints something in the newspaper or shows something on the internet about. So a person is happy. Happy because he's a lord. People are talking about him. People, I'm not just an ordinary, just a loser. I'm not a good for nothing. Actual losers don't even have a right to live. That's the mentality that we're raised. I've seen some of these little league games with the parents when their sons are losing the game. Or the kid lost the game, some of the parents, not all of course, they hardly want to even talk to their kids because the kid is an extension, a designation of
The parent's ego, what the parent didn't accomplish, didn't achieve in the form of being a lord, a god, a great one, they want the child to achieve it. And if the child doesn't achieve it, well, then the parent feels squashed, feels like the same loser that he or she felt she was, continues, perpetuates. And wants the child to, he can brag, oh, my child's now making millions of dollars. My child is in the movies. My child is a top-notch lawyer. So many people talk to me like that. Oh, my son, he's doing this. So what? What is going to happen when the day of death comes? Can he take all that money? And when he's 70 years old, what beauty is going to be there? Everybody will be just wrinkled like a prune. You can't avoid it. And so what? Prunes are good too. They're very nourishing. Why worry about that? The most important thing is we have our life. We have our devotional service. We have this wonderful program. We have devotees to associate with. What's to worry? So a devotee, he develops this quality that the king is expressing here. Now that you can see how humble the king is. A little fish is in his hand. He's a king. He holds sway over millions of people. He's powerful. He decides on life and death of so many people. And this little fish is in his hand, and he regards it with interest and with compassion. The little fish says, please, you know, don't throw me in the water here. These big aquatics, they'll eat me. Well, a proud king would say, so what? The little fish, that's what they're supposed to be. They're supposed to be eaten by the big fish. That's the law of nature. But he doesn't say that. He says, okay, I'll protect you. He gives effort. He's feeling the sense. He's sensitive to the need of the fish. He doesn't know that the fish is the supreme lord. He only knows it's a little fish. So, you know, so he takes it and he puts it in a, some type of a bowl. And then the bowl becomes too small. And then he gives it a bigger bowl. And that becomes too small. So he's concerned. He cares. He doesn't see a fish as just nothing. He sees it as a living entity, and it loves its life. So we as devotees or aspiring devotees, we have to have that same wonderful attitude that the king had. That everyone is important. Everyone is a soul. Everyone is our brother and sister. Everyone should be redeemed. Everyone should have that opportunity. And to the degree that we can think, that we can figure out ways in which we can enable persons to take up this Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada did this, and that's why we're all here today. This is due to his mercy. He could have just gone back to India. But as we know, he quotes that wonderful shloka that Prahlad Maharaj always talks about. I don't know it exactly. But Prahlad Maharaj says there's so many munis and so many yogis and sages. They go to the Himalayas, they sit in solitude. And they just concern themselves with their own spiritual advancement, their own development. I can't do that, he said. When I see suffering, it's my suffering. And everyone I see suffering becomes a suffering for me. And why are they suffering? There is one cause of all suffering, and that is basically sin. We go against the laws of God. We go against the rules of God. God says, follow these rules, these regulations, and I will take care of you. It doesn't mean, as I said earlier, that you won't have a little pain and a little suffering. That's part of your growth. But a point may be reached when there's no need for you to have any suffering whatsoever. But devotees will sometimes put themselves into or subject themselves to such difficulties, give themselves suffering so that others can become free. I told that story, I think, two talks ago. King Runtidev, he had fasted from water and food for 48 days for the benefit of his kingdom. In that prayer, he says, my dear Lord, I don't pray to you for the eight mystic powers of the yogis, nor for salvation from repeated birth and death. I only ask that you let me stay among the living beings and bear difficulties for them so that they may be freed from all, what? Suffering. That's all he was concerned about. That was the purpose of his 48-day fast. And then the Brahmin came in. The food was given to him. Brahmin came in. He took half of the food. A Shudra came in. He took the other half. Then a very shabby person, he came in and he took whatever was left. There was no food left. And then a man came in. Then man came in and he wanted water. He was a chandala. So he took care. All that was left is water. The king didn't care. He was more concerned about relieving the hunger and the thirst of those who were coming in, although he hadn't eaten for 48 days, hadn't drunk. This is empathy of a very high order. And he was just, but think about it, 48 days, you're just like a bone rack. All you see is like rib, 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 clavicle, clavicle, elbows. It's just bones. But he wasn't concerned. He was above the bodily concept. He was totally in the spiritual concept and wanted others to be taken care of even before himself. As Prabhupada said so often, that a king is like a father, and he's more concerned about his children than he is about himself. This is very, very important. And that's why we have the kind of government we have today, because the leaders are not Krishna conscious, and they don't have this empathy or sympathy. They're concerned mainly about what they can get for themselves. And so often we hear, if this politician is being exposed because he took a bribe here, this one took a bribe there, and voted on a particular proposal which benefited some multimillionaire. These are the things that are going on. So we see in so many of our wonderful pastimes, look at Prahlad Maharaj, how charitable he was. Who is he charitable to? His father had him thrown off a mountain. His father had him subjected to blasting winds. His father subjected him to ice cold. His father subjected him to heat, to poison, one thing after another, enough to kill him. But he was never killed because the Supreme Lord was always, as I said before, protecting him. So, and Prahlad Maharaj in his school, he was preaching up a storm. He was feeling the misery of all of his little demon friends. He wanted to save them. He told me, what are we wasting your time and all this frivolous sports for? You could die at any moment. Children die just as well as adults die. Why waste your life? Better chant Hare Krishna. And he encouraged them in their spiritual life. They're all no more than 5-6 years old. So Prahlad Maharaj was very much concerned about his father. His father, he could see, was just completely a mess, to say the least. It's stated that he was always drunk on strong-smelling wines and liquors. Why? He was in anxiety. When you're always trying to kill, to conquer, to dominate, to badger, to put down, you can't be happy within. There's no inner happiness. So to compensate for that, what do? You take the wine and you take the heroin or you take the cocaine. So many of these big actors and actresses, we find out that they are taking drugs. Like even that eight gold medal Olympic winner, Michael Phelps. He's an alcoholic. He's always in anxiety. Somebody will beat his record. He can't relax. So he has to go for rehab. I mean, think about it. That was the world record, I think. 8 gold medals. And he's in anxiety. And he's an alcoholic. And they showed a picture of him taking marijuana. And another, that ice skater, I forgot, from Russia. And so many actors and actresses. Why? They don't have inner happiness. As the Bhagavad Gita says, a liberated person is not attracted by material sense enjoyment, but is always in trance, enjoying the pleasure within. In this way, the self-realized soul enjoys unlimited happiness, for he concentrates on the Supreme Lord
within. So that's our business, to concentrate on the Supreme Lord within. When we chant the holy name, our mind should be on the holy name and the meaning behind the holy name. It is all bliss, it is all peace, it is all love, it is all kindness and sweetness. This is Krishna. It is all knowledge. And the more we concentrate on it, the more we appreciate it, the more we glorify it, the more we cherish it and treasure it as something, not just something to do. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, like it's tobacco auction. That's what it sounds like sometimes. And then you got the zombies chanters. Come on, this is Krishna has given us something so powerful, so precious, so good, so wonderful that we should. If somebody, you love somebody, generally you hug them. You're so glad to see them. You're so happy to be with them. We've got Krishna in his name, so the name should be chanted in such a way that yes, Krishna is on my tongue. There is so much nectar in the two syllables Krishna. This is Rupa Goswami. When I chant the name Krishna, it dances on my tongue. And I want many, many mouths. And when it enters the holes of my ears, I want millions and millions of ears. And when it enters the courtyard of my heart, it conquers the activities of my mind. And I become completely stunned. This is Krishna consciousness. One is filled with such joy that he can't speak. Filled with such joy that he can hardly see due to tears flowing down from his cheeks. Filled with the holy name that he wants to hear at night and day. That's why Lord Chaitanya says, once you chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw on the street, one should be more tolerant than a tree devoid of all sense of false prestige and should be ready to offer all respects to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. Why constantly? Because when one chants in that holy, humble, modest state of mind, one begins to experience the ecstasy of Krishna consciousness. And that ecstasy is so tasty, it's like you take one bite out of a mango, what happens? You want another bite. And then you want another bite and another bite because it's so sweet, it's so delicious, so delightful. Similarly, when the holy name becomes more and more delicious and delightful, one can chant it unlimited, like Haridas Thakur, who was chanting all day and all night because he was experiencing the nectar. He was not only chanting for himself, but he was chanting for every little bug that was around him. He was conscious of the bugs and the caterpillars and the birds and everything. Hare Krishna! He was alone, solitude. He didn't have any neighbors, of course. They were worried about that. So that can get you in trouble with the police. But yeah, he was chanting, Hare Krishna, and loud, so that everybody would be benefited. That same concept that I mentioned earlier that Srila Prabhupada came here for, to bless, to transform, to share, to distribute, to disseminate, so that everyone in the entire world, he built a whole house that everyone could live in. And this is the beginning. And it's going to grow and it's going to continue. It's going to get bigger and bigger and greater and greater. The more and more we become greater and greater by becoming purer and purer. That is our goal, to become pure. And that's what we should all be praying for, including this person here too. Please, Lord, make my thoughts pure. Make my heart pure. Make my love pure. Make my service pure. And make it better, make it bigger, make it greater, so that more and more and more people can partake of it and grow and develop and continue to spread this Krishna conscious movement all over the world. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments any of you would like to give? I'll give 10 seconds. No? Yeah? Oh, he picked up his bead bag. I thought I had a question. No? No? No questions? Yes, Mataji? Now, you have to forgive me, but I can't hear you. Could you come up a little bit closer, right about over here, and then I can... Yeah, that's okay. Because there's two ways to go. If you don't want to come up here, I don't want to force you. You can tell it to someone with a good, loud voice. But I don't think there's a problem here. Come on, sit right here. And
you have the microphone.
You have the microphone. That should help. Thank you. Good and loud. Thank you.
think it's on.
That's true. Thank you so very much for your class. What is the difference between how do we know when it's compassion and being sentimental when you're, you know, giving Krishna consciousness just among devotees or among, you know, people outside that are suffering in the material world? How do we know that it's actually compassion?
The difference between
developing our compassion or is being...
Well, you're asking what is the difference between genuine compassion and sentimental appearance of compassion? Yeah. So it depends on our character. When we're feeling pain and suffering in our own body, we like it when people come and they ask us, how are we? Can they help us? Can they assist us? We like that because it helps us in the process of healing. When people tell us, oh, I'm sorry to hear that you like so. So, therefore, if we like to be helped, we like to be catered to in this particular situation, this time of difficulty, then once we understand that we like this, then we need to simply transfer that understanding to another person. Wouldn't another person like to feel that relief, that concern, that care that we like to feel when we're in a difficult situation? So the answer, of course, is yes. So once we know that that person would like to feel the same relief, the same care, the same understanding, the same compassion. In other words, what can I do for you? Is there anything I can get you? That kind of a thing. Well, then it has to be sincere. If you really don't care about the person, but you're simply saying this to look good, to look compassionate, to look like a person of a thoughtfulness, well, then that's false. And anyone who's doing that should be ashamed of himself or herself. Because it's not compassion, and it will not help. But sometimes, for political reasons or advantageous reasons, people will act like that. So a devotee, though, who is developing, knows the difference between real compassion and false compassion. Because he himself has real compassion, and one who has it knows it. You see, you can know if a person is just saying it to say it, or he's saying it because he really feels it and is concerned about you. Okay? Yes, so, yes.
Yeah, another thing is that Prabhupada said that real compassion is to help someone understand, give them knowledge about who they are and their relationship with Krishna. And sentiment would be that we see someone and we may think, oh, they need something to eat. Let me feed them. So that's a sentimental kind of compassion, you might say. But, you know, for us in Krishna consciousness, it's important to understand real compassion for us means to give someone that understanding of who they are, that they're a spirit soul and their relationship with Krishna. Now, that doesn't mean that you disregard everything else, that you don't feed, you don't eat, you don't have, you know, a life. But, you know, the understanding is that the higher compassion, the real compassion, is to help them understand who
they
are.
Right, right. Now, just to taking that point, it's a good one. Because, for example, a person, let's say he's really hungry and you've got an apple, okay? So the devotee doesn't just give him the apple. He says, here, eat this. Oh, well, thank you so much. Well, I asked so many people and you're the only person. He doesn't stop there. He says, do you know who made that apple? Do you know where it comes from? And before you know it, he's into a whole preaching thing, you see. So, like you mentioned, he says, you give him the apple, satisfy his hunger, and then take it to the next level, which is where did the apple come from and why are you hungry and how can you avoid hunger like that. Yes, somebody else had their hand up. Yes, Balaram Puji.
Is there compassion in the three levels of modes of nature? Could you tackle on that subject briefly? Is there compassion in the mode of ignorance, compassion in the mode of passion, compassion in the mode of goodness and the genuine compassion, is what Swava said, is to give Krishna consciousness by Prabhupada's standard. That's the real compassion.
Yeah, well, that's the only thing, that is what compassion is. Anything else is not compassion. It's what we call spurious. It's false. It's just what I just said it is. It's appearance. Appearance and reality.
Like self-aggrandizement.
Yeah. One is selfish or self-centered. And the other, real compassion, is what it is. Compassion. You feel in your heart something for that person, you want to relieve him. The other is not what you say in the mode of ignorance. Well, compassion is not part of mode of ignorance. Compassion, the mode of ignorance, is that you want to wake up a person to go to work. Hey, get up.
Oh, leave me alone. I don't want to sleep.
So, what's the... A person wants to sleep. You know, that's mode of ignorance, mode of passion. There's no room for compassion. You want to be the best. You want to be the highest. You want to be better, greater than anyone else. So where's there room for compassion? Compassion is a positive quality. It is the quality of the mode of goodness, and also manifests in its truest state, as you were mentioning, in the mode of pure goodness, which is what we all should be striving for. In pure goodness, devotee does everything for the out of love for Krishna, to please Krishna, to please his devotees, you see. And when that motivation is there, then there is real compassion. When we don't have those motivations, then very often it is spurious, it is false, it is just surface, it is appearance, skin deep. Okay, so we should investigate or should estimate at the end of the night, was I true, was I honest, was I real, was I acting as a genuine person, was I frank, or was I deceptive, was I just being manipulative? It's good to ask ourselves these things because that's how we get to the truth. And then when we see that we have some faults, failings, and then we beg the Supreme Lord to help us overcome them. And it gives us the circumstance, situations to help us overcome them. You see, it puts us in touch with persons who will enable us to overcome these things. But we have to be humble enough to beg, to cry out and ask, please, Lord, I'm having a problem. I really need help. Okay, go to this devotee. He doesn't have that problem. He'll tell you how to do it. And then, that's where we have authorities, spiritual authorities. And everyone should be working under a spiritual authority. Otherwise, how can you develop humility, you see? I sometimes see new devotees, they don't want to take spiritual authority. They just want to do their own program. Well, that's not what Prabhupada said we should be doing. He set the program. And the authorities came and implement those. So when you work under a spiritual authority, then you can take guidance, you can take direction, you can focus. But when you just do your own, well, you know, I feel like doing this today. You know, I think I'll go to the Hari Nam today. I think I'll distribute a book today. I think I'll just go and eat six meals today. This is, operating by whim, by feeling. Spiritual authority says, no, you eat only two meals, and if you really... dying, you know, because maybe you didn't eat much the day before, then maybe we'll let you have a half a meal for the third. But two meals should be enough, especially if they're big ones. So spiritual authority is so important. And that's how we develop humility and modesty, and then we become spiritual authorities because we're able to take direction, we obey, and we try to do the job in a surrendered, submit. What does surrender mean? Surrender to God means I surrender to my spiritual authority. That's what it's about. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna.